Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation about digital skills in particular. What do we need, to actually make sure that we have a population that is well-skilled in the world of technology? It's one thing to say that we want technology to help us to push our economies forward, to bring up opportunities, but quite something else to be able to actually make use of the technology. And that is the discussion that we're going to be having. We're going to be having a conversation, leaning towards, skilling, but specifically for women. And to make sense of it all, we are joined by Toko Mia, who is the CEO of Girl Hype. Togo, greetings to you today.
Hi, Mudiwa. It's such a pleasure to be here. I love the topic. I'm so excited to speak with you.
Good place for us to start. It's called Girl Hype. You've heard me talking about skills. Maybe you could give us a little bit of insight into, your organization and where exactly you guys play, and I guess the business model around it, because we are a business platform. So we are always interested in that type of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I absolutely have heard you. I've heard a lot of insightful conversations, and I'm really glad to just be able to join in on the conversation, use this platform to add to the conversation, right? So Girl Hype, Women Who Code, is a digital transformation company. We are a tech nonprofit startup. And what we're hoping to do is to really bridge the gender digital divide, provide connectivity for the unconnected, provide skills development, and break the gap in understanding why there is this BE gap. Why is the youth employment gap? Why is there a female employment gap in South Africa, and specifically into STEM careers? So we're working with private sector to understand what their models are, what they're looking for. We work with universities to understand what they're providing in terms of skills, what they do and don't cater for. And then also working with local communities, high schools, skills development centers, and other civil society organizations to be able to understand what their localized community-based issues are, what they're facing in terms of, whether it's gangsterism, whether it's crime, whether it's teenage pregnancy, and how this is actually contributing to the skills divide and greater to the digital divide, right? So it's a socioeconomic movement. We are a social innovation. What the work that we do as a social enterprise is that we apply commercial strategies, we apply business strategies. We want to maximize on improvements in financial, social, environmental well-being of the goals that we impact. I live in the Western Cape. I live in Cape Town, and I always use the Western Cape as my base point for some of my statistics, right? So what I said is, okay, if I'm to impact every learner that enters grade one in the Western Cape, that's 400,000 learners. Of those learners, they have 800,000 parents. If we add their two siblings each, then they've got 1.2 million. Right. We are talking about considerable impact measure if we look at a per household capita. And so it's really important that we see this, we work towards it, and we bring technology, we bring the fourth industrial revolution, we bring these exciting, innovative landscapes. Cape Town and South Africa specifically is the startup capital of the world. We're leading in terms of developmental economics, and organizations like Girl Hype are really critical to that, especially in providing the education that we provide. Our method of operations is what's unique about us. What we do at Girl Hype is, we run code clubs, we run digital skills programs for women and youth. We run competitions, hackathons. So quickly, what is a hackathon? It is a very short 1 or 2 day competition where people get together with their various skills or their various interest points, and we pair people with people who have skills, with people who have interest points, and people who have understanding of community-based problems. And in these groups, they work together, compete against one another to come up with community solutions. So in a really short space of time, all different kinds of skilled individuals have the opportunity to come up with, whether it's a mobile app, business surrounding that mobile app design, financial models, but basically to come up with tech-enabled solutions to real-world problems, hence the word hackathon, because it's so fast-paced. It's really a sprint.
All right. So before I let you go on, Toko, before we started recording, I understood that there's a little bit of a family connection, for yourself and Girl Hype. And I wanted to get that sense from you around, I guess, some of that history and also how that history has possibly informed your decision to continue and to do this type of work. Yeah, I have a couple of other things, but I wanted to touch on that very briefly.
So Mudiwa, first and foremost, I came into Girl Hype because I had no other choice. I learned from this organization, but I had no other choice because I was both a product of this organization, but I was also a product of South Africa's current social system. So I faced the same challenges that every other young person faces out there, every other young Black female faces out there. And I was aware of the opportunities that were present in this space for a very long time. So to give you context, Girl Hype was founded in 2003 by Baratang Mia, which was that it was founded with the exclusive purpose of empowering women and girls into digital technology skills so that they can find jobs in STEM and that we can change the socioeconomics of South Africa and provide women with a chance, right? A fighting chance. So if you haven't guessed, Baratang is my mom. So from a very, very early age, I was present in her journey. To give you context, when she came to UCT to start studying for the very first time, she was 27. I was 5 years old. I was holding her hand when all this process was going on and had no other alternatives but to go to aftercare at Girl Hype. So I started taking part in the courses when I was around 9. In fact, I was observing the courses at this point. By 11, she threw me in the deep end. At that time, she was working with CPUT and the first year IT department at CPUT, providing the coding courses there. And I remember her coming to me and saying, you know what, I'm done with you sitting here, eating KFC, eating for free, doing nothing, sitting, enjoying yourself. You're going to take this course. And I did. With some fight, but at 11 years old, I was doing that course and I was learning to code. Back then, it was HTML3. We were just doing the transition right then to HTML5, really popular. And I learned to code using HTML, CSS, JavaScript, so became technology enabled and was very aware of my mother's story, where she came to UCT and basically interacted with a computer for the very first time in her life at this point, because all of a sudden she had to, you know, submit assignments online, and that is not a unique story. So when I got to UCT myself and I saw that, you know, the very girls that I'm in res with are facing the same circumstances, it really came full circle for me. And I decided then that I wanted to make an impact. So, you know, back then, I can say Barra's always been a social activist. She was chairperson of the SRC and really made a move to start something beyond what the work that she was doing as the SRC president then. And in 2003, she founded Girl Hype. So this organization has a long history and context specifically between the two of us. So when I got to the opportunity that I did, I think it was 2014 when I decided to come to Girl Hype full time. And that was as a result of the fact that I knew that the industry is not going to change. The model for education is not appropriate. I've experienced it. I had seen it. I saw the work that Girl Hype did, and I wanted to make an impact as well. So I work for Girl Hype as a project manager, later became the global partnerships manager, and have now taken on the reins as the CEO. It's been a very natural process. I'm very grateful for this opportunity. I think on a personal note, I always say that if I didn't do this to build a legacy for myself, for my family, there was no other alternative. There is no other sort of person to lean on. And so I find it to be a very beautiful context and concept. You know, South Africa comes from apartheid. My grandparents, they were cleaners, they were house helpers, they were farmers, really. And so the opportunities that I have, that my generation has, is very much based at home. I've got an entrepreneurial spirit. I'm not going to lie to you. And finding employment, it was a very difficult decision to make, but I had to do it. At the time, I had a choice. I could be like my friends. I could have gone to a corporate job, worked, got my salary, built myself up, sent some money home to my parents, to my mom, to my grandmother, who raised me, to look after me, you know, the context. And I chose not to. I chose to invest in this business because I cared, because I wanted to see a change, and because I knew the magnitude of what I can see as the vision for this company and my ability to implement it. And that's exactly what I did. I joined Girl Hype to make a difference. And in the past 10, 14 years that I've been here, I definitely think I have, and I'm all the more excited to do more.
So let's talk about, the doing more piece. You've given us quite a history of, the organization. And one of the things that's quite clear, from that history is the fact that as early as, I think you said, 2003, these issues, around, what some people call the digital divide, were already there. And, it sounds like the story that you told about your mother, the fact that, for a lot of people getting to universities, the first interaction with a computer and, if ever there was a culture shock, that is a culture, that is a huge culture shock. And one of the things I wanted to check in with is progress, all right? Because if we're in 2024, and, we're still talking about this, right? One has to ask the question to say how much progress has been made, in this endeavor, because these are huge issues that the likes of Girl Hype are trying to address. On this platform, we've had the likes of Girl Code are also working in their corner of the sector, around some of these issues. We've spoken to a number of organizations and startups that are doing their bit, around digital skills. So insofar as you can share, I would be, keen to understand what type of progress has been made and where the deficits sit right now, because when I was doing some reading up earlier on, I understand that you've set yourselves as Girl Hype quite some ambitious goals around the number of people that you want to train, that you want to upskill and all that. So it's just a check-in, to understand where are we right now when it comes to this skilling conversation. All these years after independence, all these years into the technology revolution, where are the gaps? Where are we? Where are the gaps?
Thank you so much. I think that this is truly a very beautiful conversation. And I think that there are two folds to this conversation. You know, we've really come a long way in terms of triple BEE and affirmative action, but there's still so much that we need to do in terms of empowering the girl child, empowering youth, empowering those young people in townships and in rural areas, that young girls from Gamaloi, from Tsomo, from Jankemp can really find their self, their voice, and understanding what it is that they have to add to the conversation, to ensuring that they have role models, to ensuring that they have opportunity to enter into industry because they are skilled, because they are the best at what they do, and because they are really well positioned and geared to be able to do that, and not because you know, and not seeing them there because they've been disempowered, because they've been disenfranchised, because they don't believe that they can do that. So some shocking statistics. At age 5, all young girls think that they have the capacity to become the president of the country. But by as soon as age 7, they no longer believe that they are capable of doing that. So just cognitively, to give you perspective, between age 5 and age 7, what starts to happen is a transition from personality development to the skills development, ability to read, write, enumerate, quantify, and argue logically. And it's at this point that the information we are feeding to our children is actually disempowering towards girls. Never mind the fact that by age 8, boys have a spatial conception that girls don't have and may only develop by age 24. Why? Because of the toys that boys play with, because they are...
Before you continue, Toko, I heard a term inside there, and I know that there's someone who's listening and asking themselves, what is spatial conception? Just as you're explaining, yeah.
So spatial conception is basically the ability to see things in context of space, volume, measurements, before those actions, that thing exists. For example, can you draw a cube within a space that does not exist? These are the skills that are required to perform jobs such as being an engineer, being an architect, being able to understand quantitative maths in calculus. Drawing, these are the types of skills that's what we call spatial conception. And spatial conception comes from building things and pushing your car down those things and seeing how that little toy car or how that little marble is going to move before it moves across that area. So technically, if I can give you the example of what girls are doing in this time, they're playing with dolls, they're playing with Barbie, they're imagining themselves marrying rich husbands. This is the information that we're giving our girl children at the exact same time that we're teaching our boy children how to imagine, how to be spatially cognitive. So let me jump from this part of the conversation and come over to what progress has been made to date. Girl Hype has taught over 1 million girls how to code, and we have an ambition to teach 1 million more girls how to code in the years that we've been around. And the reason for this is because we are an impact-driven organization. What we want to see is to see young girls being able to get coding education quickly, efficiently, at a young enough age that they can change their mind. So my thesis is, and because this is based on my experience, that if you can find a girl child at age 15, and you teach her how to code between the ages of 15 and 18, guaranteed 100% of the time, that girl child will go and study a science, engineering, or IT-related course at university following that exposure. It does doesn't matter whether she is from Khayelitsha, whether she is from Diepkloof, or whether she is from Tsomo. She has the capability because she has had the exposure. So this is really much about exposure to industry as much as it's about exposure to mentors, role models, most importantly, and to the actual skills. I roll out a method that is at its core because, of course, we have a hybrid model, right? So we've got a nonprofit and we have a for-profit, which are linked, and they are subsidiaries of each other. So the two entities, they work together and they're bound by the same need, the working towards the same vision and mission. And so what the one entity cannot fulfill, the other does. This is very new. For the past 23 years, GirlHype has been exclusively a nonprofit organization, nonprofit company. And it's in my leadership that I've converted it into a for-profit hybrid model. Hence, I say we are a nonprofit tech startup. Because for us now, going into the future, we see our customers, including travelers, students, business professionals, and women who are in different industries who are looking for an opportunity to be able to enter into this tech field, right? Which has always been the case, but we really want to look into that more. We're looking more into our missing middle. Why we see that sector as important is because we have realized that those who don't have access are not just in the townships. They're also in this sort of sector. So South Africa is very unique in terms of this term of the missing middle. Basically, what it means is a missing middle is a household where each parent or each guardian, where the household has an income, an annual income of less than 300,000 rand, or a two-parent household with less than 600,000 rand. And what you find increasingly is that students travel, they make the commute from our traditionally township areas into our suburban areas. But that doesn't change their socioeconomic standard or their parents' ability to provide for them. And so we work with high schools like Sea Point High, and other high schools that are sort of catering to lower income households, but are based in the suburbs, even though the students attending those schools do not live in the suburbs, right? Your urban areas.
Togo, I'm gonna come to the business model just now. Very, very interested in that, and I think what you've described, I'm very interested to maybe explore that structure. I think you said, there's a non-profit and then there's a for-profit element. One is a subsidiary of the other. Very keen to get into that. But before that, though, you were talking quite a bit about some of the stats. I'm just going to call it a little bit of child psychology elements that were coming up as you were talking just now. The fact that, a young girl at the age of 5, thinks they can be president, but by the time you're 7, they don't see the world in the same way. And we often talk about something called nature versus nurture out there. So I wanted you to help me to settle something a little bit, or at least shed your thoughts on something. I recently sat in on a discussion where two DJs were debating. One DJ was female, one DJ was male. These two DJs are now both in their 30s, and they've done all right, and they're on the scene. They get gigs, etc. And the core of the debate was, boys and girls are socialized different, which sort of lends itself to part of the reason why we see more male DJs and producers. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because the counter that the lady in the discussion had was to say, Listen, the way that boys and girls are brought up is different. You boys are out here on computers, you know, much younger. It seems we're not interested in that. But the male in the conversation was saying, listen, in the same household, we have access to the same stuff, right? How can we say that, you know, one of us is going to have a greater proclivity to computers than the other, right? Because the part of the discussion was between the two, the boys and the girls, the ones that were playing with computers earliest were the ones who ended up playing around with music producing software, DJing software, got into music production earlier in life. And then you start your DJing career a bit earlier. And by the time you get to a certain age, there's been more experience. I'm sure we could probably overlay that same discussion to a number of other computer-related fields. You know, you come from the world of, you know, hardcore coding and, you know, all of that stuff. So it was to get your thoughts just around some of those dynamics. When someone says, oh, but in a house, you know, where if a family, if the family does have the ability to have a computer in the house, we all have access to the same things. This is what brother and sister are saying to each other. How come one ended up playing with the computer and the other one didn't? So, yeah, I was just keen to get, you know, your thoughts on that.
You know, I think it's very different because of the fact that, Mudiwa, you can say that we grew up in those same houses. But there are still great issues that exist in our society. And the way that the society, the humanity, the concept of us as a community living together is set up is inherently biased towards gender in specific aspects. And it would be wrong of us to say that our society exists without male privilege, because the ostracization of women in industries like technology is hegemonic to the way that these industries are inherently set up, despite the fact that the very first female software developer was, in fact, a woman and is the resulting celebration of International Girls in ICT Day, which is Ada Lovelace, who actually developed the first computer programming, computer communication networks, and what we call today software development, is only something that we've been able to celebrate now. And so in order for us to break the hegemony, in order for us to break the socioeconomic status quo, we have to accept these topics like male privilege. We have to accept the inherent discriminatory processes that have existed in our societies for over 600 years that we're only having a chance to navigate and change now. The gender pay gap, the fact that when you and I apply for the same roles, we are offered different salary packages. On average, statistically, you would get a higher salary than I would for doing the same technical job. It's not an indication of my skill or ability to do that job, but the nature of how our society is positioned. If we are to, as South Africans, ignore the topic of race and where we come from in terms of a very long history, 300 years, of racial segregation, discrimination, colonialism, apartheid, and to assume that we're able to today look at the problems in our society with a blank eye without looking at redress, reallocation, reconstituency is extremely important. And it's something that needs to be addressed if that is the concept that people are going to have. We can't turn blind eyes to these concepts, you know, and we have to address the fact that blind eyes are being turned. That's what we have a responsibility to do. So we must have these engagements. We must have these conversations. Yes, we can grow up in the same household, but from that same household, I'll give you an example. of even myself and my brother. One thing that my brother's always been able to do, growing up in the same household that I grew up in, is assert himself. Because, you know, from a younger age than what I was, even though I was more experienced than him, he had more ability to ask for a higher salary when requesting a job. Whereas I, as a female, did not have the concept because of the fear that I would not be able to stand my ground when that negotiation took place. And those are basic skills that we learn on the playground, right? And that's not just me. So statistically, girls are only likely to apply for a position when they are 27% boys are likely to apply for a position when they qualify at a 20% benchmark, whereas girls are likely to apply for position when they are at an 80% benchmark. Girls still think that in order for them to go woman, in order for them to have a career change or to get the promotion, they need to go to school and get the skills to do so. Whereas boys have an ego ability that says, because I want it, I'm going to apply for that position and I'm not going to go to school and reskill in order to do so. So we have to change the lens. It's there and we cannot ignore it. So I don't agree with that, DJ, to say, well, we grew up in the same household and you had just as much access to the mixer as I did, because it's not true.
All right, cool. I think that helps us on that end. And one of the reasons why I also asked the question was to maybe get your sense around the work that you're doing on a daily basis, because it's a multi-pronged type of problem that you're dealing with. And from a stakeholder point of view, you've got, let's say, the girls themselves, but it was also to maybe get an understanding of, is there any work that's then done with maybe the wider family structure or communities, you know, that type of thing? Because you know, from what you're describing, there's a mindset, you know, shift that needs to happen, not only in the girls themselves, but, you know, in the wider communities within which you know, the girls are existing and, you know, taking some of their socialization from.
There definitely is. So we're working with a development company at the moment, Devs Hired. And we are building a platform. Thank goodness we've just won the capital fund. We won a competition with Retail Capital for business funding, an SMME Tech Center Stage competition. And in this competition, we had to name our business hero, right? So I named my business hero and our what we would spend this funding on that we won. We've decided to take this funding and inject it into the Women Who Code platform, which is going to be exactly this needs address and redress, right? This will be our seed capital, and we're looking at this as the start to the liquidity that we're going to need in order to raise further funding, but also to build the platform. So we're still on a seed raising round, whilst we've also gotten the injection to ignite this platform development. Our timeline is about 4 months, and we're going to launch the mobile application then, with a beta round where we'll invite schools, we'll invite civil society organizations, universities to onboard their students. The idea and concept is going to be a micro e-learning platform. What we aim to do is to empower women, girls, and their communities through a social networking-like environment where they're able to micro e-learn whilst also social connecting with one another and linking up with mentors, industry experts, role models, and other information like jobs, opportunities, internships, and just being able to chat with one another, that they would be empowered to see skill development as something that is a part of everyday life, and the ability to skill and reskill should be at the point where I can buy a data package from MTN for R2 and spend 30 minutes or an hour of my time whilst I'm in the bus on the way home, gaining skills and insights into exciting new prospects and careers, such as data science, programming, and other developing generative AI, machine learning careers and jobs that are really the jobs of the future and the fuel behind what is for IR. So we're hoping to also work with development agencies to bring in their technical qualifications. The idea is that you should be able to certify yourself whilst on the app at the same time that you would be able to gain the skills, you know, walking away from that data spend that you're going to spend, you know, either sitting on a public Wi-Fi hotspot and learning the skills that you need. You would actually be able to use that effectively as a return on investment by getting the certification required. So we do have free courses, master classes that are provided by industry experts and mentors, as well as we have the certified courses that are partnered by corporates. People like AWS, Oracle are loading these certificates on. And ideally, long term, what we hope to do is to also have micro certifications, your end qualifications through Cisco that you'd be able to complete online and complete the exams for, training for your GMATs, training for your English TEFL courses, etc. That this platform is really going to be able to bridge the digital divide in terms of skills. So we're really, really very fortunate to have won the retail capital SMME funding competition at this point, because it is so critical. And I think it's going to really make the change that we want to see.
Great to hear, you know, the fact that a company like Retail Capital is doing their bit. We've actually had them on this platform a couple of times, you know, and also great to see that there is a plan to address some of those issues, not only, you know, with the girls themselves, but, you know, with the wider communities, because it does, you know, seem, at least from the evidence that you were presenting earlier on, that there needs to be a more holistic approach, you know, to how all of these things are done. So where I want to end off, Toko, is around the model itself. You've touched on it a couple of times throughout this discussion, and I like the fact that we have spoken about the fact that you know, you won that competition and you're using those funds as you know, seed funding. My question is a question to you that I've asked a number of people that operate in the nonprofit sector. I have quite a bit of experience in that sector, and one of the biggest debates in that sector is the use of the word social enterprise, right? For you, you know, what does that mean? I think you alluded to it earlier on, because you spoke about, you know, for you, it's at least to my understanding, it feels like, you know, this, the hybrid that you've created under your leadership, you know, sort of lends itself. But for yourself, when you think about social enterprise, because I feel like there's a lot of confusion, you know, out there. My personal understanding of social enterprise is that you're addressing a big societal need, but having a business model underneath it that helps to sustain whatever work, you know, you are doing, as opposed to relying on grants, donations, that type of thing. That's my understanding. But you are an operator, so you can educate us.
I love this question, MG. And I think one thing that I want to add, right, is that sometimes your customers are the ones that are going to define what your business model is. So GirlHype has a very interesting way of running the tech nonprofit startup, right? With us, we actually, at the moment, the way that we operate, we've got the nonprofit on top. Because at the base of our operations, we have, as you say, social enterprise. At the base of our operations, we have the for good model, the social enterprise where the organization's work is to create strategies that are, and implementations that improve the socioeconomic status of women into STEM fields, STEM jobs, science, technology, engineering, and maths, and that women in other industries and women in these industries stay and feel empowered enough to stay, that they earn enough money, that they earn what they want, that they are appropriately treated within the workplace, that there's appropriate conduct, but that they stay abreast of industry changes and developments and are able to influence into those to drive conversation. That's what we want to see. We want to see women on top. We want to see women crushing, you know. So what we have, as I said, is your customers are the ones that determine the business model. For me to come up with the for-profit side of Girl Hype in terms of the mobile application technology and the LMS is as a direct result of over a year, almost 2 years of research and inquiry with our customer base and our talent pool to understand what it is that is missing from the concept, what is missing from the model. And what most people said is, even though I'm a part of the code club and I learn to code, I come in during the week, I access the office space. So this office space is actually available to all of our students to come into whenever they want for training, etc. But as all of them are on VAC at the moment, you tend to have the business people that come in. But what I'm saying is, they were saying that they want to be able to access this platform at any time at their own convenience, right? And so that's how we came up with platformic development. And how, so for us, we also grew in our idea of building the for-profit side, because we started to realize that as we're building this idea, we're going to reach a different customer base and we're going to reach a different kind of talent pool. However, in this conversation, we said there is no way that we're going to continue, that we're even going to build this side if we don't ever continue the nonprofit side. So coding classes and teaching coding to girls in underprivileged areas and women to skill up in everything from basic computer skills, youth to skill up in everything from basic computer skills to advanced development and industry level skills that are marketable and practically applicable at workplaces, has got to be happening at scale, at convenience, when I want to, how I want to. I don't always want to get up. So for us, it became extremely important that we're able to help those that want to skill up and enter into these skills from all corners of South Africa, from all corners of the world, and to ensure that we actually keep the mission at the forefront. So making the nonprofit business model the primary business model was the obvious choice. But the for-profit model for us, we realized, in order to take a fully commercial perspective on it, it could jeopardize our ability to reach our hardest customers. And so as much as there's a subscription model, there is also, it's very nominal, it comes in extremely low, and it's at a fee that anyone can afford. So in our beta testing phase, we actually want to take it through corporates. We want to ensure that corporates are the ones that are paying for their staff to be, you know, retrained and skilled up. Let me give you a perspective. You have a ShopRite, right, that hires 20,000 cashiers internally around the country. How awesome would it be if those cashiers had built into their package a subscription to a platform like Girl Hype, like Women Who Code, so that whilst they're at home, whilst they're working as cashiers, they're also gaining particular skills that will be able to secure their future should they decide and when they decide to leave that particular avenue, whether it's to go to university, whether it is to go back and redo matric, or whether it's to start their own business, get a job in a different company, working a completely different, career path. That's what we want to see.
All right.
So
yeah,
helps to answer this hybridity that we have.
No, it certainly does. And I think that's a good place for us, to end what has been, quite a fascinating and, informative discussion, around some of the challenges that are facing, the skills gap, especially around digital skills, in South Africa. Started off just talking a little bit about the history of Girl Hype. It's, anyone who would be listening to this, or if you were sitting in my seat, it's very clear that Toko is very passionate about what she's doing, and the work that where I think she said a nice statement earlier on that she was going to daycare at Girl Hype, from an early age, and took on the courses from the age of 11. So this is as early as it can get. And one of these days I'm going to get Toko back on so that we can, understand what she did with this coding skill during her teenage years, because that's not something usual that a lot of teenagers are doing. A lot of teenagers were not coding, at least at the time that I suspect she was in high school. So it would be a very interesting story, to try and understand that. Also getting a sense of some of the issues that are facing, the adoption. We did a bit of a pulse check to say that a lot of these discussions and conversations are things that we've been hearing for decades. Girl Hype itself has been around since 2003, but she gave us some good statistics just around some of the impact that has been made as an organization. Girl Hype is looking to skill more than a million women, and some of the things that she was talking about, I'm just going to call them the child psychology elements. The two points that struck me was the point about, the mindset of a 5-year-old versus a 7-year-old, girl, and the limitations that are placed on what someone thinks they can do, as early as the age of 7. But the other one was, I think she said between the age of 15 and 18, if you teach someone to code during, that crucial block, there's an increased chance. I'm saying increased chance, but I think she said it's guaranteed that someone is going to go and study, one of the STEM subjects, because of that exposure that they would have had. And then also just getting into some of the discussions around funding, because to address, these big issues in society, you do need the resources to make that happen. Toko and her team recently won a competition. They're using that as seed capital, for some of the work that that they're in, and we interrogated that particular business model, where you've got the nonprofit at the top, but you now have an element of for-profit underneath it. And with the way that she's talking about the development of the business, I suspect that there'll be one or two other projects that are going to come in underneath this this umbrella. So it has been a really great discussion. We were talking to Toko Mia, who is the CEO of Girl Hype. Toko, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Madiwa. It has been such a pleasure, and I will definitely be back whenever you invite me, but I'll definitely get back to you when we're launching our platform and get back to your readership, your listenership, and invite them to be a part of the change and work with us to bridge the digital divide.
Great. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.